In a state that values seniority, we have a senior senator who just lost the primary but is running a write-in campaign. Lisa Murkowski is here and ready to talk with you. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. What does Lisa Murkowski have to offer to independent voters? Our phone number, 1-800-478-8255. 478-TALK in Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Email talk@aprn.org. We have statewide political candidates today and tomorrow on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and September, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com. And by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
Senator Lisa Murkowski, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Morning, Steve. It's great to be with you.
Well, you seem pretty chipper.
I thought
you'd be a little tired out.
No,
you've been campaigning very hard.
Every day the energy is just like, wow. I keep thinking one of these mornings I'm going to wake up and I am going to be tired, maybe after the campaign is over, but right now it's every day. We're building on momentum from the day before and it's just all good.
Well, So I take it you feel it's going quite well.
I feel it's going quite well. You know, in the past week, Steve, I've been everywhere from Barrow, Nome, Kotzebue, Point Hope, Ketchikan, Petersburg, Juneau, Sitka, here in Anchorage. I was in Fairbanks yesterday, going to Fairbanks this afternoon, all points in between. It's just electric out there. People are energized, and I think it's because they've really tuned into the fact that this is an important election. Alaska's at a point where, you know, all elections are important, making sure we've got the right people in office is important, but I think there's been a little bit of a wake-up call after this primary. People are looking at the two names that are on the ballot from the traditional parties, the Republican and the Democrat, and they're saying, don't know them. Who are these guys? What kind of experience do they have? What will they be able to do for us, and what will that mean to us as a state? People have really kind of sat up and they're paying attention to what is going on, and I think that is contributing to the incredible energy that we are seeing in our campaign all over the state.
Well, when you say wake-up call, that brings up Angela's question here. Who is in the military.
Okay.
And says, as a military wife, I understand the importance of fighting to win. I don't understand why Senator Murkowski didn't fight harder to win her primary.
Well, and that, you know, that's a fair question. But I will tell you, I took my primary campaign very seriously, as any good candidate will do, and worked throughout that. It was a different campaign in the sense that I'm working in Washington, D.C. all summer long, and you've got 3 weeks essentially from the time that we adjourned on the 7th of August until the 24th of August. Spent a fair amount of money trying to get the message around, but I'll tell you what happened to us. There were a couple things. First of all, when the Tea Party Express comes in at the ninth hour last week of the campaign, dumps about $500,000 in a very, very negative advertising campaign. I chose not to fight back at that. I wanted to stick to the high road. I thought Alaskans deserved better, and I learned how much that negative stuff stuck. It's not an excuse, but it was a reality that 1 week of that three-week campaign was the time that Senator Stevens was killed. Three of my other friends were killed in that plane crash. I directed my campaign out of respect to Senator Stevens and what he had built, that during that time of mourning of our state, we were not going to be fundraising. We were not going to be up on the air. Personally, that just took a little of the wind out of my sails. It's not an excuse, but it is a reality of the fact of that campaign in August.
Well, it's certainly an answer to the question. You now basically are running really against your own party.
Mm-hmm.
And I take it you're saying, you know, when I go back to Washington, assuming the write-in bid wins,
right.
when I go back to Washington, the Democrats may well have lost control. The Republicans may be in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And do you expect to be accorded the seniority that you accumulated.
Yes. Yes. I am not my party's nominee. I'm still a Republican. When I had to file my intention to run as a write-in candidate, you have to state on that form what your party affiliation is. I registered as a Republican when I was 18. I'm still one. I haven't, Joe Miller has changed his party affiliation 4 different times because he got mad at the party. I get mad at the party all the time, but I haven't changed that affiliation. And so when I go back to Washington, I will go back, not because Republicans have sent me back, but because all Alaskans have sent me back. That gives me some freedom, some liberation, if you will. But in terms of what happens to my seniority, that remains intact. The 8 years that I have built stays with me. The seniority that I have on the Energy Committee as either the ranking or chairman, depending on what happens, will still be there. My position on the Appropriations Committee will still be there. I don't lose a minute, a day, an hour of seniority.
How about your relationship with McConnell, though?
Well, I tell you, McConnell has taken the expected path, if you will. You got a party nominee. He stood by him. It's the same thing that we're seeing here in the state. Randy Riedrich, the chairman of the state's Republican Party, we all know that he and Joe Miller have not had exactly happy times together, and yet he has taken that public position of you got to support the nominee. I feel very strongly that if you care about your party, you want to make sure that you have the best person going forward. If you care about your state, you have the best person representing you. So this standing with the process, I'm not so convinced that it's actually going to help us. Think back to the Lindauer election. You remember that one? We found out at the end that this guy was not what he had presented himself to be, and we as a party were flailing around at the end, and we lost that.
Oh, I remember it well.
I remember it well. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@aprn.org. Senator Lisa Murkowski is with us. She's been with us as a state senator, as a U.S. senator, and now as a candidate for the second time, really, as a candidate, maybe even the third time.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to deal with you because you'll answer the questions.
Thank you. That's what I'm supposed to do, though.
Well, I want to go into this business about the healthcare reform.
Sure.
the you kind of gave every appearance of kind of sitting on the fence and doing a basically trying to consider the merits and figure out what advantage did Alaskans in healthcare reform. You ended up just deciding against the whole bill, and participating in the Republican tactics along those lines. And then your opponent in a primary, Joe Miller, accused you of not wanting to repeal it. So then you came out and said, well, yeah, I would repeal it.
Oh, I voted to.
Would you explain how?
Yeah.
How do you repeal it?
Well, let me give you.
They worked so hard to get this thing.
I know.
That is not all that different from where the Republicans started with.
But let me just kind of walk you back through some of this. You mentioned that when we started out, I was really trying to figure out a path forward. I held 5 town halls across this state to hear from Alaskans in terms of what is it that you're looking for? What are you hoping for? And some of those town halls were, I'll be honest with you, there was some raw emotion, there was some frustration, there was some anger. I might add that I never had any security forces there with me at any of those public town halls, but neither here nor there. The fact of the matter is I was really reaching out. I wanted to understand what is it that we need to address first and foremost. And I heard from Alaskans from all corners that they said, we need to reduce the costs. We need to reduce the cost of health care. And so I'm looking at reform and saying, that's our number one mission here. That was not what we ended up with the very, very, very partisan bill that moved through the Senate. Now, it's been said that, well, Lisa, some of these, Scott McAdams has says this may as well be Mitch McConnell's bill as well as Obamacare, because there were Republican amendments that were included in them. There were actually about 19 of mine that I moved through the HELP committee. What they were technical amendments that ensured that the definitional language included Alaska Natives so that they could be eligible for grants. So it was not as if we're putting substantive change in. They were pretty much technical, but those were kind of countered against the Republican ledger. For the most part, any substantive amendment fell on party lines, just every single one of them, which was extraordinarily frustrating. So we got to the point where it's moved through the process and it comes to us. It is absolutely 100% a partisan bill. It passed on partisan lines. I opposed it. Not because I was a Republican opposing it, but because the bill does not reduce health care costs. Not only is one of our local actuaries here in the state, does he say that here in the state it's going to increase our costs, but the head of CMS, the guys that are basically looking at the language and making a determination as to what it does, they're estimating increases. We're going to see increase health care costs and what we're paying by about 12%. So when you say we're embarking on health care reform, but we pass a measure that doesn't decrease our costs and really hasn't increased access to the level that we need it to, how can we advertise that as reform? So on the day after President Obama signed that bill into law, there was an effort on the floor to repeal it. And I voted at that time to repeal it. Now, Miller has, I guess he's just failed to look up the very, very, very public record. It's part of the congressional record. It's part of my website. It's very clear how many times I voted against it and the fact that I voted to repeal it. But he's chosen to ignore the facts and say what he will.
Well, if you end up back in Washington, what's the solution?
Well, okay, there are solutions because we have to address it. One thing that's going on.
Last time we talked about it, you said is, you know, we got to look at tort reform.
Got to look at tort reform. That's one of the things that we can do right here, right now. You don't need to wait until things are resolved, you know, through the courts. Is this individual mandate going to withstand the constitutional test? We don't need to wait for that. We can move right now in advancing tort reform to help reduce the cost of defensive medicine. We can work right now to do things like allowing for purchasing of insurance across state lines, allowing for greater pooling to basically reduce our costs, make it for us as Alaskans more attractive. We can do things to promote what they're doing here at South Central Foundation through their NUCA model, which is really looking at how the delivery of healthcare is administered. It's done kind of to use the term, it's more like a medical home type of a concept, where if you're a person with diabetes, you don't go to one doctor for one thing and somebody else for another and somebody else for another. It takes up your time, takes up your money. You've got a team that works with you to address the concerns and the problems that you face. We recognize that about 80% of the healthcare dollars that we're seeing going out, the real expenses are so often associated with those who have chronic conditions. So let's look at these models. And we don't have to wait. We can get moving on this tomorrow.
So better management of chronic conditions,
yep.
Looking at efficiencies in the system. But how about the insurance business? I mean, don't you think something needs to be done about, you know, denial of care or pre-existing conditions? Kind of an arbitrary.
And those are the good things that are in that bill. You know, the fact that we have addressed the situation that you cannot be kicked off or denied care if you have pre-existing conditions. That was an important thing. That was something that was actually agreed on by Republicans and Democrats alike. And there were real points of agreement throughout that process that I think it's important to recognize. The Indian Health Care Reauthorization Act, which I worked on for 6 years, we passed it through the Senate by an overwhelming margin. We got 83 votes in the Senate. That ended up being tacked on to the overall health care bill at the end. That's a good part of that bill. Well, I have been very, very critical of the overall bill. There are aspects of it that that are important, and the taking care of the pre-existing conditions is absolutely one of them.
Okay, well, I guess I need to clarify that point. I'm glad you brought it up, and I was definitely going to ask you. You voted against the Indian Health Care Improvement Act. Why?
I did not vote against it. I led the fight through the Senate, and I got the bill through the Senate. Again, I think it was a vote of 83 to 10, incredibly bipartisan for any legislation. We were successful with that. Nancy Pelosi killed it over in the House. And so when we went back in the 111th Congress, the real need was, okay, we got to find a vehicle to move it through. Senator Dorgan, who's the chairman of the Indian Affairs Committee, advanced that as an amendment, essentially, to the health care bill. I voted against the health care bill. I voted against the overall bill. There is no denying that. But what is important to recognize is that it was my work that allowed it to move through the Senate for full passage. I was actually recognized with a lifetime award of achievement by the National Indian Health Board for my efforts in advancing the Indian health care reauthorization.
So basically, you're saying as it ended up, it was because it was attached to Obamacare, you had to vote.
Right.
You had to vote against the
yep.
whole thing.
Yep.
All right, let's go to Lorraine in Kotzebue. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. You're on the air, Lorraine, with Lisa Murkowski.
Hi, Lisa.
Morning, Lorraine.
Hey, good to talk. I just had a couple things, and I'll try and put them real quick. First of all, I believe everyone needs health insurance, but I think everyone should absolutely have their constitutional right to choose whether or not to purchase health insurance.
Did you mm-hmm. want an answer to that?
I would just like to know what she thinks about that.
All right.
Well, I would agree with you, Lorraine. As a parent, my husband and I have made sure that that we've got some kind of a health insurance plan that works for us and our family. But I'll tell you, I want to know that I'm not being told by my government what my health care plan looks like. Our family needs have changed over the years. When we were a younger family, and I wanted to make sure that we had a policy that was going to cover maternity benefits, boy, that was what we needed. Now that our children are older, and moving on, you know, as a family, we're looking. Okay, what's the best type of policy for us right now? With the health care bill that was passed through the Congress, you're pretty much going to be told what will be required as part of the basics of that plan. For some families, they may feel that what I need is, you know, my young son, maybe the best thing for him is a catastrophic plan. Maybe the best plan for a family that is at a different point, maybe they need a more comprehensive plan. But right now, with the health care bill, with that individual mandate that requires that you have insurance, that's the first requirement. But then secondarily, it has to be a plan that matches or meets up with the requirements that the government has set. I happen to believe, Lorraine, that the individual mandate that is being challenged right now by at least 20 different states, including Alaska, I believe that the courts are going to determine that individual mandate is unconstitutional.
Lorraine?
Okay, that's good to hear. My second question is, can you stand against abortion? You voted twice for taxpayer funding of abortion, and back in 2003, you voted to put the United States Senate on record as supporting Roe versus Wade. And I totally support the life of the unborn. I also support the health of the mother. And in the case of life-threatening, I think it's fine. But that child has had no choice in coming into this world, and I think we need to guard that life.
Well, Lorraine, I respect your position. I did, in fact, vote several years back to make that statement in support of Roe versus Wade. I want to work to make sure that abortion is as rare as possible. But I know that there are so many who, as you have stated, feel very strongly about this, and that therefore the line needs to be drawn in terms of no federal funding for abortions. Now, I too recognize that when it comes to rape, incest, life of the mother, that these are those exceptions where federal dollars may be used. But I have not supported federal funding for abortion. That is a clear and a bright line that I have made consistently and will continue to make.
Okay. Then why did you vote twice for taxpayer funding of abortion?
I have not. And if you have specifics as to those two that you are referring to, I'd be happy to take a look at them and explain to you what the actual vote may have been. But I have consistently opposed taxpayer funding of abortion.
Well, through the National Pro-Life Alliance, which I get their mailings, they have brought that out in a couple letters, and I would just like to know that you are standing for that position.
I am absolutely standing for it, and again, I've got a record in the United States Senate after 8 years of votes on the issue of abortion, and primarily when it comes to us in the Senate, it does relate to the federal funding aspect of it. And again, where I have drawn the line is in respecting the will and the wishes of those who feel so strongly because of the ethics and just the emotional aspect of it, that we should not be using taxpayer dollars to fund abortions. So that's the position that I have taken. That's the position I will continue to take.
Thank you very much, Lisa.
Thank you, Lorraine. Have a good day up there.
Lorraine in Kotzebue, thank you very much. Let's go to Bob now, joins the program from Soldotna. Bob, you're on the air with Senator Lisa Murkowski.
Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Bob.
We're all pulling for you down here, but, you know, I've heard, I just want to say, you know, you can't trust any literature. This has been such a rough campaign with the Tea Party people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I know they're lying about your record and things, but, you know, another thing that's been said is, well, how you voted with the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, when Ted Stevens was our senator, you know, Senator Inouye called him his brother. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden was a close friend. I mean, I never heard anybody complain about Ted having those people as his friends, even though they were lifelong Democrats.
Right.
But they're pulling that on you. But, you know, we need to come together as a country and quit fighting back and forth along partisan lines. And I truly believe this. And I feel that you're doing a good job. You're running an open campaign. And my biggest thing is being a lifelong Alaskan. As a matter of fact, I was named after Bob Bartlett. That you want to represent all of Alaska, not just the Republican Party. I am a staunch of conservative myself, but and it seems like you're holding up pretty good for this point in the campaign. You don't seem to. You don't need your own security guards. You know, I was born and raised in Fairbanks, and I just can't believe how this guy Miller has gotten these people to believe that. I think he's just looking for a retirement, to tell you the truth, Lisa. But I think you're doing a good job, and you've got my vote. And people really need to realize that that the other side is using dirty tactics, and you aren't. You're being open, and good luck to you. We're all pulling for you here in Soldotna.
Well, Bob, I appreciate the vote of confidence. I appreciate your statement that you will support and vote for me. Just remember to fill in that oval, spell it out correctly, M-U-R-K-O-W-S-K-I. Scott McAdams somehow thinks that 1 in 12 of my supporters is not smart enough to figure out how to fill in the oval and spell the name, but it sounds like you've got it, Bob, so I appreciate that. You know, you touch on an issue that is really important. And that is one of bipartisanship and consensus building. We in the Senate, this is a body that operates off of consensus. Our Senate rules require that before a bill can even go to the floor for consideration, there has to be unanimous consent to allow that to happen. Now think about it. If you take an approach, as Joe Miller has said, that, you know, the only time that I should reach across the aisle is to throttle the neck of a Democrat, if you take that approach, how are we ever going to get anything done for Alaska? Think about what Ted Stevens did and how he built things out for this country. You mentioned Senator Inouye. The relationship that the two senators from the two youngest states and what they built for our states that are not part of the contiguous 48. Think about some of the signature legislation that has impacted our state and our industry. From the fisheries perspective, it was the Magnuson-Stevens Act. Warren Magnuson was a hardcore Democrat working with Ted Stevens to build fish policy that has lasted for decades. You have got to have the ability to work together. You've got to have the civility, I don't know, and the ability to take the good ideas from the Democrats, and take the good ideas from the Republicans, and take the good ideas from the independents and the moderates and the libertarians and the AIPs, and roll them all together and try to figure out what the best policy is for us as a state. And it comes through those relationships that you have built. Compromise should not be a negative word. It should not be something that is viewed as detrimental. This is how you build policy. One of the reasons that we have seen the level of gridlock that we have had in Washington, D.C., is because you have the Republicans so far on one side and the Democrats so far on the other that there's no way to get to the middle to govern. I want to be one of those who can help bring the differing factions together, who can allow us to stand up, not necessarily for our political parties, but for the best interests of our respective states, so that we can build policies that work for all of the 50 states.
Bob,
that's the kind of attitude and the kind of person we need in the United States Senate. Thank you, Lisa.
All right, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, before we take the break, let me just almost feel like you needed to add, except for the last 2 years, to all that.
Well,
I mean, you know.
I hope we have time to talk about the last 2 years, because what we have seen with this administration coming in, you've got a Democrat administration, but you also have huge majorities in the House and the Senate by the Democrats. The fact of the matter is that in many of these instances, they didn't need to work with the Republicans. They didn't need to work with the minority. And when you don't have to work together, what happens? You kind of do things because you can, not necessarily because they're right. And I know, because I was in the legislature when the Republicans had a veto-proof majority. And we passed some things, and I can't think of anything in specific that I want to single out, but we didn't have to work to gain those good ideas from the other side. I don't think that that is good for us. And so we had a situation where as a party that was trying to advance ideas, whether it was with healthcare reform or whether it was with financial regulatory reform. The ideas that we put forward were shoved back and not accepted, and not necessarily because they were not good ideas, but because the game plan had been drawn out very, very clearly. It was, nope, it is a Dodd bill that we're going to do. It's going to be drawn up by him. We're not going to be working to achieve that consensus. It was the way with the health care bill, and it was unfortunate. And it was a bad process. And as a consequence, you're forced to kind of figure out, well, how do we ride through this? We shouldn't be riding through congressional sessions. We should be working through at every opportunity. But the political dynamics of these past 2 years, with overwhelming majorities in both the House and the Senate, and a brand new administration that was really on intent, I think, on getting their agenda passed through very, very quickly, caused for political tensions and dynamics that we haven't seen in a long time.
So I think the answer then was, well, the House would do whatever the president wanted, and the Senate leadership really wasn't serious about working with the Republicans because they didn't really have to.
They had the votes that they needed.
1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@aprn.org, and we got a stack of those waiting as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Are home heating costs more than you can manage? If you're living on a fixed income or reduced income, the Heating Assistance Program may be able to help. To obtain more information or an application form, visit the Heating Assistance Program website at heatinghelp.alaska.gov or call 1-800-470-3058. Sometimes a little help makes all the difference. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Well, we're in our election phase of Talk of Alaska's. We're doing multiple shows every week. The election is approaching, and it's an interesting election. And one of the more interesting candidates is with us, which is Senator Lisa Murkowski. She lost a primary. She's running a write-in bid. It's got a lot of backing and a lot of financing, and nobody's ever won with one of these before.
But we're making history, Steve. We're writing the book on what a successful write-in campaign looks like for the United States Senate.
Whoa.
That's cool, huh?
A positive attitude.
Of course it's a positive attitude.
Well, it's another email here from Greg to talk@aprn.org, and he just says, why would any Democrat want to vote for you, basically?
Well,
what do you have to offer?
Okay.
I mean, I know here you're talking about, well, you really do need to work in a bipartisan way. That didn't work the last 2 years. So what? Are you saying, well, we'll do better?
Well,
what can you offer to an independent or a Democrat to get their vote that, of course, you're going to need?
And I'm going to start off by saying, first of all, don't think of yourself as a Democrat. Don't think of yourself as an independent. Think of yourself as an Alaskan. What is best for our state right now? What is best for your community? I think Greg was from Anchorage. What is best for your family? And I'm hoping that regardless of where you are, whether you're Greg in Anchorage or Lorraine in Kotzebue, that what you're worried about right now is our state's economy, where our jobs are going to be coming from. We got an oil pipeline that is less than half full. We've got a gas line that, you know, we don't know where our gas line is. Our opportunities as a state, it seems like we're getting pushed back harder by the federal government every day and slowing us down from advancing things. With the federal deficit as it is, there's all this talk about, well, we're going to see cutbacks in federal dollars coming to us. What does that mean to us? What does it mean to Greg's family and to his to his opportunities, not as a Democrat, but as an Alaskan. And okay, so now we're thinking about Alaskan. What I have been able to do in the past 8 years is not only work to deliver, whether it's assistance through appropriations, whether it's my leadership on the Energy Committee in advancing energy policy, whether it is pushing back on the federal government in whatever ways, whether it's reining in the EPA so that we don't shut down our refineries in this state. I'm able to do that because I've built up some seniority. I've been there for 8 years now. What I can deliver to you that neither Scott McAdams and certainly not Joe Miller, they don't have that experience. They don't have the ability to say, I am the most senior member on the Republican side for the Energy Committee. I'll be setting energy policy for our state, energy policy for our nation. Neither one, Scott nor Joe, can say, I'm going to be on the Appropriations Committee. In fact, I am going to be moving up 5 slots on that committee just by virtue of the retirements coming my way. So if you want to talk about deliverability, if you want to talk about making sure that you have somebody in the room, in the committee room, sitting at the table and sitting at a place on the table where you can make a difference, where we're talking about what it means to you and how it translates to the jobs and the economy. Now, let's put it into perspective, because if Scott or Joe gets in, Mark Begich then becomes your senior senator. He is the senior senator after 2 years, pairing up with the most junior member, whether it's Scott or whether it's Joe, both of them would be the most junior member of any incoming freshman out there by virtue of the fact that they don't have any legislative experience. And so we, for the first time since statehood, will have the least senior delegation in the United States Senate. That means something, because in the Senate, it is a system that operates off of seniority. So if you're worried about your job, if you're worried about your kids' future, if you're worried about our state, then you better think about who can be the most effective individual immediately in the United States Senate. And it is not Scott McAdams, and it clearly is not Joe Miller.
We have another question from Lucille, who says, how do we know if you're reelected, you wouldn't move to the left, like some are saying?
Well, you know what? Scott has accused me of being too conservative. Miller has accused me of being too liberal. I have to figure I'm just about right. I'm kind of right there in the middle, which, quite honestly, is where most Alaskans are. You got 54% of the people that choose not to affiliate themselves with any of the major parties. They say, I'm going to be undeclared. I'm nonpartisan. I'm going to vote the person. And that's really what this campaign is all about, is not only voting the person, but voting for Alaska. Who is in Alaska's best interest? So if the concern is, you know, am I going to be too liberal? Hey, you know, look at what Miller has been saying. He says, I voted against my party 300 times. You know, I don't approach a vote saying, is this the best thing for my party? If that was the way I did it, you know, Alaskans should have elected the chairman of the Republican Party. I approach every vote saying, is this what my state needs? Does this help Alaska or not? And so, yeah, I confess, there probably are 300 votes where I did not toe the line with my party. But I'd like to think that what this is all about, what you want from your representative, is not that you are 100% in alignment with your party, but that you're in alignment with the state's interests. Now, I think that Joe Miller will be a party guy. The real question is he going to align himself with the Republican Party 100% of the time or the Tea Party 100% of the time? I don't know. But I am not that party person. I am the person who's going to be there for Alaska's interests.
Rachel from Anchorage, you're on the air with Lisa Murkowski.
Hi, Lisa.
Morning, Rachel.
Hi. So I'm a young Alaskan woman, and I've grown up here, and I've seen a lot of friends be in a lot of abusive relationships, and I keep hearing these Scott McAdams ads that say that you voted against money to prevent domestic violence in Alaska, and that's something that's really alarming for me, and I was wondering if that was true.
No. And let me kind of detail my involvement on this issue, because I, too, am extremely concerned about the statistics that we see here in our state as it relates to domestic violence and sexual assault. For decades now, our state has consistently been, if not the highest statistics in the country, right in those in the top two or three slots. It's unacceptable. So what have I been doing? Well, there was $13 million that I got to deal with domestic violence, sexual assault issues in terms of prevention programs when the Awake Shelter just last year was at a crisis situation in terms of being able to keep their doors open. I stepped in to help to facilitate that. I was a co-sponsor of the Tribal Law and Order Act that moved through the Congress just this past year and inserted in that a provision that requires an assessment of what we have available, particularly in our rural communities, in our villages, when we don't even have the forensic. We don't have the nurses. We don't have the forensic SART kits to determine whether or not a rape has occurred. You know, how can we ever successfully prosecute this? So what we're trying to do is get a full and fair assessment of what we already know to be a crisis in far too many of our communities, so we can use that to help deliver more resources. I have been working to advance women's shelters out in some of our more remote areas. What I have done to help facilitate the education, the prevention end of domestic violence, sexual assault. I was one of the co-sponsors of the VAWA, the Violence Against Women Act, back in Washington, D.C., and was recognized nationally for my leadership role in advancing this. Since I have been in the Senate, this has been an initiative of mine. When Governor Parnell announced his initiative, his statewide rallies, I joined with our Attorney General in leading the parade, along with Diane Benson and some other leaders in this area. This is an issue for me when I look at all the greatness that comes out of our state, all the richness and our potential, and I continue to see these horrifying statistics as they relate to women and children. It is an initiative and truly a crusade that I will not let up on. I am really quite stunned that of all the initiatives out there that Scott McAdams is choosing to attack me on this, because I have been a consistent and a strong leader on this.
Rachel?
Thank you. That's very good to hear.
Thanks for calling in, Rachel.
It's Talk of Alaska, and Senator Lisa Murkowski is our guest. She's running a write-in campaign for the U.S. Senate. She's the incumbent senator. She lost the primary, and she's trying to make history. Let's go to Matthew. Joins the program from Sitka, and I think Matthew has an issue that probably was one of those that hurt you in the primary. Matthew, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Senator Murkowski. I am not a Miller supporter in any way, but the only thing he said was that I liked was his opposition to your bill, Senator 881, the Alaska bill. And I'm concerned with that bill for a number of reasons. I'm a commercial fisherman, and particularly the future sites, the sites, those 50-some-odd sites that are selected throughout southeast Alaska, which, among other things, are major recreational areas for the communities of southeast Alaska, including the ones around Sitka. And I I didn't know that this language was going to be in that bill until you presented the bill. I felt we were left out of the loop, and many of us in Southeast Alaska didn't have a chance to have any input on that. I'm really concerned about it, and I haven't made up my mind who I'm voting for, neither you or Scott, but I don't know who. So can you address that that section of... Mm-hmm. Of Senate Bill 881, which you authored, the future sites?
Yes, and I appreciate the chance to do so, Matthew. This is an effort to finally and fully bring about equity to Sea Alaska as one of our 13 Native corporations that under ANCSA was promised lands as part of that federal bill. All of the other Native corporations have received conveyances of their lands and are able to move and develop. Sea Alaska, for a host of different reasons, not the least of which were long-term timber contracts that had been entered into that needed to run. For a multitude of different reasons, Sea Alaska has not completed their conveyances. It's now 40 years beyond that time, and it is time to resolve this. So for about the past 3 years, I have been working not only with Sea Alaska, but with the communities in the region, with the industries in the region, whether it's the timber industry or whether it's the fishing industry, to finally get this issue resolved. And it is controversial. I will absolutely grant you that. Whenever every acre of land, particularly down in the Tongass, is precious. And there are those that You claim ownership because you recreate there, you pick berries there, you go fishing there, and so I recognize the tension that has come about through this legislation, and it is unfortunate that we have seen the level of emotion that we have, but we still need to acknowledge that we must fully and finally resolve this issue of conveyances. We have been working, and when I say we, it's me. It's my staff on the Energy Committee. It's my staff in Alaska. It is all those that I have working for me that have really put time and energy into making sure that we are gaining as much input as possible from all stakeholders. We, Sea Alaska themselves, have held over 200 meetings on this issue in the areas. We have, through the Energy Committee, conducted community meetings in every affected community to make sure that we are listening to you, listening to the concerns. And what we have done is we've taken that input and we have made changes not only to the areas of timber selection, but to the issues of the future sites, which you bring up. And from a fishing perspective, I know how key and critical this is. And we've been trying to do this in a manner that, again, is fair and open to everyone. One of the things that came to us, it was sometime midsummer, we received a series of letters from fishing organizations in the southeastern area that said, we don't feel that we have had sufficient time to weigh in on some of these fisheries sites, our future sites. Can you kind of pull back on it? Well, we actually did. We recognized that this was still an issue that was yet unresolved. We needed to gain more input. And so that's exactly where we are. We have not finalized that legislation. I don't know how many different drafts we have had, but with the 14 different meetings that we had in Sitka alone to discuss the Sea Alaska bill, I think it's important to know that this process has been as open and as transparent as we could possibly hope it will be. Here's where I believe we will be next. Next Congress, because this bill will not advance. There will likely only be two more weeks of session after the election. I do not believe that any freestanding legislation will move during that lame duck period. So what I believe will happen is we'll come back in January, and what I hope to do is take again all of the input that we have received and put this in a draft format so people can look at these maps, so that there can be these open discussions. And then again, hold other series of meetings so that we can, as Alaskans, figure out what the best resolve is. This is not just resolving this for Sea Alaska shareholders. This is resolving this issue for all of the stakeholders, all of the communities in the region. So I apologize for going on a little bit about this, but it is an issue that particularly in Southeast is one that there is a lot of emotion and people have taken sides. I need you to know, Matthew, and others that are listening, that we are continuing the effort to reach out and incorporate the good ideas, the good fixes, again, whether it's as it relates to the timber selections or as to the futures site. So I would hope that we could count on your input as we move forward in the new Congress.
Matthew?
Thank you very much, Senator. I just hope that this bill doesn't reopen the general reopening of ANCSA, which I think would be
an incredible
can of worms for the state of Alaska.
No. I absolutely agree, and that is absolutely, positively not my intent here. We do not want to reopen ANCSA.
As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And by
Fire Island Wind, offering a renewable energy alternative to natural gas for South Central Alaska. Information at fireislandwind.com.
Hello, I'm Peter Kenyon, NPR foreign correspondent and former APRN reporter. Help support APRN's news mission by joining me on October 24th for the first of the new APRN speaker series. Go to APRN.org to reserve your ticket today.
It is Talk of Alaska. It is Senator Lisa Murkowski. She's running a write-in campaign to hang on to her seat, and Alaskans are trying to decide. It's difficult. It's a write-in. That's definitely uphill. In fact, it's never been done. Sean.
But it will be done.
Sean in Anchorage. You're on the air with Lisa Murkowski.
Well, I don't believe it will be done. I was at the debate last night, incidentally, before my main comment, and Lisa asked Scott to pick out the people in the room that would not properly, you know, fail to fill her name in and do it properly. And I will tell you that nobody in that room is going to fail to fill in your name, Senator Murkowski. The people that will fail are the people trying to get by in this world and take their kids and do their errands and everything else. When they run by and see it's time to vote, they'll say, oh, yeah, and they'll go in the voting booth. They'll see Joe. They'll see Scott. They'll see the Independents, Libertarians. And if they remember to fill your name in, they'll either put Lisa or they won't fill the oval in. History shows that, and that's one comment. But the reason I called is that continually, I believe, you have proven to side with the corporation throughout your career as a senator over the interests of the people. Going back to the Military Commissions Act, this is the first chance we've had the chance to hold you accountable. You did vote to legalize torture with that vote and suspend habeas corpus. In fact, the Supreme Court reinstated that. And then there was the bankruptcy bill. In 2005, you voted for the bankruptcy bill, which was written by the credit card companies, which made it difficult for people to legitimately claim bankruptcy, which is mostly due to health care related issues. And then there's the health care bill. But the thing I think that troubles me more, and the FISA bill, you let law-breaking telecoms off the hook that it illegally wiretapped American citizens. But the thing that I
She's not going to have time to answer all this. Get to your point
well,
here.
The point that sent me over the end, that proves that Lisa sides with the corporations over the people time and time again, is in May, at the height of the Gulf of Mexico oil gush, I watched Senator Murkowski get on C-SPAN and sit there on the House of the Senate floor and lobby to keep the 1990 $75 million liability cap in place for negligent oil companies. I was astounded that a person from Alaska with the history of the Exxon Valdez, 20 years after the fact, only a year after the Supreme Court and the people Roberts and Alito, or not Roberts and that gang of thugs, voted to 10 cents on a dollar reward Alaskans for punitive damages, that this senator from Alaska, Lisa Murkowski, would argue so mom and pops can develop offshore oil drilling. We don't want mom and pops trashing something that they can't fix.
And okay, Sean. Yeah, she's only got 3 minutes left, and I know she's going to need it. So, yeah, your response. The liability limit.
I mean, why would we
want an oil mom and pop oil company to be drilling in deep water anyway?
What that motion was about was taking that the $75 million liability cap, which is currently in place, and the proposal was to have it be unlimited. When you go to absolute unlimited liability without any real recognition of the impact of that unlimited liability. So what I did, instead of doing a knee-jerk without any kind of background or understanding, what I said was, we need to raise the liability limit. We must. And we need to do it in a manner that makes sense. Not only do we need to make sure that no taxpayer will ever be on the hook for whether it's what we saw with the Deepwater Horizon or for the Exxon Valdez, we need to make sure that these limits make sense. So what I did and what I led with was a wholesale reform of that liability limit. I tie it to risk factors. What a concept. You know, when you look at what goes on in the deep water off of the Gulf of Mexico at 5,000 feet versus 100 feet in the Gulf of Mexico or up north. Why not tie the liability limits to the level of risk? And I put this with the president, with the executive, to make this determination so that, in fact, it is at an area or at a level where we really do get the level of scrutiny so that these big corporations do not get off the hook. And in addition to looking at, when we talk about the risk factors that are involved, there's a series of 13 risk factors. One of them is what's the track record of the operator out there? So what this allows for is, again, first and foremost, you never have any taxpayer that's ever on the hook for any of these, an environmental disaster caused by a negligent corporation. But two, you allow for the continuing existence of an industry in, for instance, the Gulf of Mexico. If we had gone to unlimited liability, the only ones that would be operating in the Gulf would be the supranational, the national oil companies, whether it's China Oil, Saudi Aramco.
Okay, but it wasn't just you weren't just arguing for the $75 million cap.
Absolutely not. It cannot stay in place. It has to be reformed. It's my legislation that actually reforms it.
Lisa Murkowski, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Talk of Alaska tomorrow. Harry Crawford. Joe Miller scheduled next week. Thanks to Dave Waldman on controls.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message is sponsored by the FAA. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a pre-existing medical condition, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the new temporary federal insurance program being administered by ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. The program is for those with qualifying pre-existing conditions and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months. Talk to an independent insurance broker or go online to ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.